This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 2nd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 145. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. The Big Deal feature. This week in the Wee scandal, Conservative and NDP MPs grill the Wee brothers and the Prime Minister. Highlights from the Finance Committee hearing. Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it time to say something good about British Columbia's colonial history? There are lots of things to criticize. It was a different time and a different place in the 19th century. Society has learned a lot, and no doubt the ideals of multiculturalism and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms have made the country and the province better. Nothing has ever been ideal in British Columbia, and poverty continues to hold Indigenous peoples back, but there are some differences. The first colonial governor of BC, James Douglas, was the son of a mixed-race couple in Guyana, his father a Scot and his mother Creole. It is BC Day on August 3rd, as it is the first Monday of August every year, but did you know that there is also a Douglas Day on November 19th? In British Columbia, Douglas had a reputation as an abolitionist. During the gold rush, he invited hundreds of blacks from San Francisco to settle in BC. Some of them formed the African Rifles Militia in Victoria and acted as Douglas's color guard at ceremonies. One of the African American settlers was Mifflin Gibbs, who became a city councillor in Victoria under Lumley Franklin, the first Jewish mayor in British North America. Douglas was also an opponent of Indigenous slavery. Yes, tribes up and down the Pacific coast kept slaves. Fast forward to 2020. Slavery continues in other parts of the world. Vancouver's port relies on trade with China, where Muslims from Xinjiang province are subject to forced labor. Products from those sweatshops come through the port of Vancouver and end up in stores in Canada. At a time when the West is reconsidering its relations with China and Xi Jinping's Communist Party, it's time to stamp out slavery everywhere. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
Tony Chung, Kimmy Chung, and Natalie Wong in the South China Morning Post. Hong Kong elections. Mass disqualification of opposition hopefuls sparks political storm. The group of 12 includes such well-known names as Alvin Young, Joshua Wong, Dennis Kwok, and Gwyneth Ho. Government warns more nominations could yet be invalidated, saying there is no question of any political censorship or restriction of freedom of speech. The mass disqualifications, the most since the city's return from British to Chinese rule in 1997, came just a month after Beijing imposed the sweeping national security law on Hong Kong, prohibiting acts of secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces to endanger national security. Matthew Strong in Taiwan News, Taiwan's first directly elected president, Li Teng-hui, oversaw liberalization. President Li, Taiwan's first native-born and directly elected president, oversaw the island nation's transition to democracy. He passed away July 30th, aged 97. Li served as head of state and as chairman of the Kuomintang from 1988 until 2000, a period marked by democratization and liberalization, but also by tension with China. In 1990, Li was elected by the largely rubber-stamped National Assembly for a six-year term as president, but massive protests by students led him to set reforms in motion. Constitutional amendments resulted in direct elections for the presidency and in the full re-election of the legislative one. Josh Robertson in ABC News Australia. Queensland police investigate crime syndicate involvement after Brisbane women charged with coronavirus border fraud. Dinah Lasu, 21, Olivia Moranga, 19, and a 21-year-old Alcester woman have been charged with fraud and lying to health officials to evade quarantine after a trip to Melbourne, a declared COVID-19 hotspot. The ABC understands police are examining whether the trio acted on the instructions of crime syndicate handlers. Police are investigating the women's alleged involvement in stealing luxury handbags in Sydney. Diana Lasu's parents and seven siblings tested negative to COVID-19, but are awaiting results from a second test. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Sarah Gensler in the Olympian. Judge OK's effort to recall Thurston County Sheriff over refusal to enforce mask order. A petition to recall Thurston County Sheriff John Snazza from office for not enforcing the state masking mandate can move forward, a judge ruled in the county's Superior Court. The statewide order requires citizens to wear face coverings in most public spaces, with a few exceptions, as part of the state's ongoing efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19. Under the order, the violators can face up to $100 fine or 90 days in jail. In a statement posted to social media on June 24th, the Thurston County Sheriff's Office said it recommended that everyone exercise safe and precautionary measures, including wearing masks around those in high-risk groups, but that it will not criminally enforce the order. Carissa Gall in the Haida Gwaii Observer. Haida Gwaii COVID cases may be flown to mainland. People on Haida Gwaii who test positive for COVID-19 may be flown to the mainland as a proactive measure, health officials have confirmed. Speaking during a virtual public meeting on July 27th, hosted by the Old Masset Emergency Operations Center, community health nurse Shauna Smith said individuals on the islands who have been infected with the novel coronavirus may be transported to a hotel closer to a major hospital, such as the Mills Memorial Hospital in Terrace. Check news. No BC businesses have been fined for lack of compliance during COVID-19 pandemic. There are thousands of businesses operating through the COVID-19 pandemic on Vancouver Island, and none have been fined for breaking BC's COVID-19 operating rules, according to Island Health's Chief Medical Health Officer. New numbers obtained by Check News reveal 120 complaints made concerning businesses not playing by the rules. But while Island Health completed 1,800 inspections during the pandemic so far, they have not handed out any penalties. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. BC bureaucrat and billionaire face different challenges with the same social media platform. As Horgan ponders an election this fall, NDP blurs the lines between governing and politicking. BC spends taxpayers' money in Beijing-friendly media outlets. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
The charity got tagged the weak charity scandal on this when, in fact, the charity didn't make the final decision and wasn't involved in the process of declaring whether or not there was a conflict. Yet the Every Media has carried this as the weak charity scandal around the world. This has been, it's devastating to a Canadian charity through this whole process. And as I, frankly, there are days that we wish that we had never answered the phone on April 19th when Rachel Warnock called asking for us to help. And it is incredibly unfortunate that the people who are bearing the worst cost in all this are young people who don't have their summer placements. And because of the harm caused to We Charity, so many of the young people and children in Canada that we serve, who we won't be able to provide the same programs to in the years ahead.
That was Craig Kielberger, and this is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast as we follow the ongoing We Charity scandal. Craig Kielberger testified to the House of Commons Finance Committee with his brother, Mark Kielberger. The Kielbergers, who are the driving forces behind We and its associated companies, were grilled for 4 hours on July 28th about their role in Justin Trudeau's latest conflict of interest scandal. The Liberal cabinet gave We a no-bid contract in May to handle a $912 million student jobs program instead of handling it inside government. The contract has since been canceled because of the controversy, Trudeau's third conflict of interest scandal in as many years.
And as I've already said, this didn't go the way it should have gone. And there are additional layers and question layers of scrutiny or questions, knowing what we know now, that would have been good to ask at the time.
Those are the words of Katie Telford, Trudeau's chief of staff, who also testified. Trudeau's mother and brother were paid more than $300,000 for appearing at We Day concerts and auxiliary events. Michelle Douglas, the former chair of the We Charity, said that the board was kept in the dark about a lot of things, including the payments to the Trudeaus, but not others. Conservative Pierre Poilievre asked Douglas about that.
So were you surprised to learn that Margaret, Sophie, and Sasha Trudeau received over $300,000 in speaking fees?
I don't know the precise nature of what they were paid for, but if it was exclusively to speak on the We Day stage, that would have surprised me.
The Kielbergers or We Charity ever expressly communicate to the board that speakers were not paid for We Day events?
They did.
They did. Okay.
Or that may have come from the executive director of the organization, but I know the board made inquiries into that.
Here is NDP member Charlie Angus with some of his questions.
My daughters, you guys changed their life, and I think that's fair, and I want to put that on the record. But they talked to a lot of former WE staff, including one who said that WE became another private company whose number one aim is money, and I want to work at an organization where fear is not used as a tactic to achieve an end.
Okay,
that's what I hear from the young people that my daughters worked with. So I think that should be on the record.
That's your final question, Kielbergers answer that. And when they're answering it, I want them to tell us, because I've heard different testimony on this today. Mr. Angus said in his remarks that going to net hundreds of millions of dollars, I want you to answer that question as well.
Sir, we are not a private company. We Charity is a charity. And I know Jesse Brown's a friend of yours, and he's been spreading false information, sir. But the truth
Mr. Angus, you're done. You more than I met them. So don't say he's a friend. That's cheap. Do the right thing.
Sir, I would appreciate if the facts speak for themselves. The facts is simple. MeetUp Social Enterprise, 100% of the profits have gone to social good. We Charity is a registered charity. The impacts of our programs that have been torn apart in this political process include the fact that 70 million hours have been logged by Canadian youth to volunteer, 7,000 schools run our programs. Sir, globally, 1,500 schools and classrooms built, 200,000 children going through them, a million people with clean water and health.
You didn't answer what they say about your toxic work environment. Toxic work environment.
And we believe that as a Canadian charity, it should not dragged over the coals for political purposes.
Conservative Pierre Poilievre asked many pointed questions about WE's finances and policies. This is one of them.
You can make a hell of a lot of money as an individual within a not-profit organization by paying it in salaries. And I see here in section 5.1, I do have the floor, that you can pay salaries and you don't even need to submit timesheets to prove that you did the work. That's explicitly stated in 5.1. And I ask a very simple question to you. You've still not answered it. Was there anything in this agreement that banned you or your brother from receiving a salary? Yes or no?
Yes. Mr. Gore to the Kiel. Kielbergers, yeah, you said yes. Do you want to further expand?
Explain, sir.
Yes or no?
We are not paid by any one of those organizations.
That wasn't my question. Yes
sir,
or no?
By definition, we are not paid by any one of those organizations.
Yes or no?
Paid by any of those organizations.
That wasn't my question.
And MeetUp Social Enterprises is legally distinct and very
separate. That wasn't my question.
From the MeetUp Foundation.
Okay, we understand now, Mr. Chair. There will be no answer to the question.
This is a very serious topic, sir. Mr. Chair, can I just have 15 more seconds, please?
You can have 3 more seconds. It's my time. Get to it.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
Sir, we have sat through 4 hours, which is 4 times more than anyone at SNC-Lavalin or the Duffy Affair, as context, sir.
That's factually wrong.
We are not. Listen, we're getting off the topic. I know we're all getting a little tired.
Can I get to my next question, Mr. Chair? Can I get to my next question? He's had his response.
No, sir. That's a significant allegation.
We're just going to have to invite you back if you don't want to answer the questions. We'll bring you back for another 4 hours.
Mr. Poilievre, we will allow an answer to this question. Go to your next one, and then we'll soon move on. Mr. One of the Kielbergers.
Any allegation and false claim that we would have financially benefited as individuals from this is simply that. False. No institution, no charity listed here pays us a salary or any form of financial period. It's incredibly insulting that you will not accept our answer.
Have you hired private and you or anyone acting on your behalf, including a law firm, ever hired a private investigators that may have looked into media personalities like Mr. Jesse Brown or reporter Jaron Kerr?
Sir, if I may say, with due respect, you are reaching to the bottom of a barrel if Jesse Brown is now who you're quoting to bring.
I asked you a question, and you're not answering it.
I can answer it very clearly, sir. There was a public exchange between Jesse Brown and the lawyer.
You're not answering it.
Sir, I am. Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm going to answer very clearly with 2 points. Number one, there's a public exchange on Mr. Brown's...
Did your law firm hire a private investigator
your question?
Globe and Mail reported that Wee's U.S. division paid more than $600,000 to U.S. political consultants who specialize in dirty tricks, including Firehose Strategies, 202 Strategies, and David Baum and Associates.
The standing orders clearly state that witnesses are required to answer the questions put by witnesses or risk being found in contempt. The question was yes or no whether the witness's law firm hired a private investigator to look into Jesse Brown and Jaron Kerr. The witness then refers to a Twitter exchange, and I'm not interested in looking at Twitter. I'm looking for an answer. So yes or no, did your law firm hire a private investigator to look into these reporters? Yes or no?
Sir, we've been here for 4 hours, and now you're threatening us. We just feel that this is not appropriate. There is a very clear public record on this.
Yes or no? Yes or no?
On July 30th, Justin Trudeau testified for 90 minutes. Here is NDP member Charlie Angus.
Mr. Prime Minister, 2017, after you're found guilty with the Aga Khan deal, you said we are going to work with the Office of the Ethics Commissioner in the new year to ensure that as we go forward in full and complete compliance with the rules in place. You tell us that you held this project back, you did the due diligence, you were aware that there were perceptions that might be problematic. We're not talking about perceptions, we're talking about breaches of the law. In your due diligence, why did you not bother to talk to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner? It is so obvious, Mr. Trudeau, that these conflicts were there. Why did you think it didn't apply to you?
Mr. Prime Minister.
Mr. Angus. The public service came forward with a recommendation to cabinet to move forward either with this specific third-party provider that was We Charity, or else not move forward with the program at all. That was the binary choice we were posed. I did not influence the public service to choose this organization. And indeed, when the public service came forward with this organization, I said, you know what? Let's put the brakes on it. Let's make sure that it's done absolutely everything right, because there are going to be questions because of the connections with my family on this. Yes, in hindsight, I should have recused myself, and perhaps that the program would be delivering for students right across the country right now.
Mr. Polyev, the Prime Minister's got about 8 seconds to answer that one, then we'll go to your question.
The CSSG was about recognizing and rewarding volunteerism. Correct. It's not about jobs. It was about volunteerism. And that, unfortunately, is something that we can't do because the program...
Back to Mr. Polyev.
You just misused the word so that you could justify outsourcing a program that already effectively exists within the government. Now, when you did that, you directed $500 million. And yes, you did. You were the head of the cabinet. Did you know that the group to which you were directing that $500 million was in violation of its bank covenant? Yes or no?
That is not something that we had as information at that point.
Did you know that the government money would go into a real estate shell foundation instead of into the We Charity? Yes or no?
The details on the payment were worked out by our professional public service in terms of how the contribution agreement flowed.
So did you know that the chair of the board had resigned? Yes or no?
No.
So you clearly did not do any due diligence of your own. As the chair of the cabinet responsible for approving a decision, you should have had some basic facts. Sir, you were using $500 million of taxpayers' money here. You had a fiduciary responsibility. Why didn't you ask these questions?
Mr. Prime Minister. We flowed tens of billions of dollars through the CERB, through various ways to help Canadians. And we were very, very active in making sure that flows right. There are many, many different programs. And in cabinet government, we trust the ministers and the public service to do their jobs and make sure that things are delivered in the right way. And in this case, they did.
An update on my inquiries about frequent We Day speaker Rick Hansen. Monica McCluskey, spokeswoman for the Rick Hansen Foundation, said Rick Hansen appeared at 36 We Day auxiliary events from 2010 to 2019. McCluskey said that neither Hansen nor his foundation were paid to attend any of the auxiliary events, and that Hansen was never paid for speaking at We Days. The Breaker.News asked to interview Hansen, but McCluskey said that, quote, Rick isn't available to discuss this further, end quote. The Breaker.News will keep following the Wii scandal.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the volunteers in British Columbia communities, big and small. On British Columbia Day in 2020, let's think of the people who give their time to help others, the people who give their time to make our communities better and safer, at churches, community centers, to help the poor, the disabled, the seniors. Thank you to British Columbia volunteers. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 2nd, 2020. I'm Bob Mack, and thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 2nd in 1776, the United States Declaration of Independence was signed? It includes these famous words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And on August 2nd in 1858, the UK Parliament passed the Act to provide for the government of British Columbia, which had been known as New Caledonia. BC Day was declared in 1974 by the Dave Barrett NDP government. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Happy BC Day.
Until next week.